Another massive week on the Big Sports Breakfast. Coaches under the pump everywhere in the NRL. We spoke to Warriors boss Cameron George on Monday, and the week ended with great news with Australia and New Zealand chosen to host the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup. Liverpool won the Premier League as well. Sit back and enjoy some of the interviews from the week. We're now joined by a woman who's made 77 caps for the Matildas and would be celebrating this morning. Lydia Williams, Matildas goalkeeper. Good morning to you. How are you?
Running on about 2 hours sleep, but I'm good.
Take me through your night, Lydia. What happened? When did you find out?
We actually found out, I think it was about 2 a.m. this morning. So we were ready for the pre-announcement from midnight. Got about... left all the media stuff at about 8, so we had a good kind of 3 hours, and then the announcement was at 2.
And did you get the feeling that you'd secured the bid, or it was going to be a positive announcement? What were the feelings in the last 5 or 10 minutes before you got that announcement? Did words start to filter through, or do you just wait until everyone else finds out?
Oh, it's waiting until everyone else. You hope you kind of put out everything into the universe that's positive, and the feedback you get is positive. But really, it comes down to, you know, a vote that the FIFA council does, and you don't know the result until they read it out live on TV.
Lydia, can I ask what is the feeling like now, knowing you've got this World Cup here on home soil? What does that mean for you guys?
Oh, it's incredible. I think never would we have thought when we first started playing that we'd won a home World Cup. And, you know, it's obviously a long process. It's been 4 years in the making, us being heavily involved in the last year or so. And, you know, just riding a couple of days, 3 days to go. And then now we're going, it's here. So it's pretty incredible.
I can only imagine, Lydia, you'd have a WhatsApp group with all the girls. Messages been coming thick and fast.
Oh yeah, it's gone wild. So it's great. Everyone's just so excited.
And Lydia, you've done a lot of work in the community with Indigenous Australians as well. And you know, what would that mean, and what impact could that have on that community?
I definitely think it could help out the Indigenous community a lot. I think it could be obviously inspiring a lot of Indigenous kids. But also, you know, start a pathway to promote more football and hopefully bring more Indigenous people into the Matildas, Socceroos and Australian football.
We always talk about soccer in this country, Lydia, being, a sleeping giant. What will this do for not only women's football, but football in general in Australia, winning this World Cup?
Oh, it would boost everything football in the country. I just think, you know, being a part of a World Cup before... multiple, and just seeing all the fans that come out and just watch, and the stadiums that are full, and just how much Australians love any sport, let alone there's going to be the best of the best in showing for women's football in a couple of years' time. I just think it's just going to boost everything in every way in the country, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, Lydia, I've no doubt that every single woman footballer would want to be a part of this World Cup campaign. What does that mean in and around preparation now? Obviously, you've still got plenty of time, but individually and as a team, is this something that is spoken about regularly in regards to, you know, preparation, everything we do is looking towards this World Cup?
I think we prepare as it's a normal World Cup, everything we kind of do, make sure you're at a good club, you're doing everything you need to. But this is kind of like a sleeping giant in a way that we've never had to prepare for a home World Cup. And I think the pride that Australians have for their country and New Zealanders it opens up another can of worms. I think that's just going to motivate us even more. So, yeah, it's kind of exciting to see what's going to happen in the next, 2 years leading up to 2023.
Yeah, it's exciting, Lydia, and I think we can feel it. And, you know, we've already received phone calls and text messages this morning about how good it'll be for Australia and New Zealand. But that'll obviously place added pressure on the girls. What, after winning the World Cup, what would be a minimum expectation for the Matildas going into that 2023 World Cup?
I mean,
I know things can change between now and then, but is the minimum requirement to be successful to make top eight, quarterfinals, semifinals, or go on and win it? I know everyone wants to win it, but what's minimum expectation?
I mean, I think we always want to beat what we or improve on what we've done last time. And obviously the best result we've had was, you know, making it to the quarterfinals and finishing seventh. So I think always we want to improve on that. Always we want to win it, obviously, but we want to go out there and put on a show and leave everything on the pitch. And for us, if we do that, then, you know, we could definitely go to the final.
Picture this, Lydia. You've got the FIFA Women's World Cup trophy and you're taking it back to Kalgoorlie, where you grew up. How good would it look in downtown Kalgoorlie?
Oh, it'd be great. I better have a parade for sure. That would be sick. Right down Hannon Street.
Outstanding. Brian, great to talk to you and great to see that you're coming back to Australian basketball. How are you?
No, great. I'm really excited to, you know, head back to New South Wales. I really enjoyed my time in Sydney down on the coastline, and I'm excited about the opportunity in Wollongong.
So how did it come about, Brian? How did you end up back in the NBL with the Hawks?
Well, you know, it's over the last probably 5 or 6 years being in China, a real energy coming through Asia about what's going on in Australia. And I've been following it closely and just what Larry Kesselman's done with the league since I left the league back 11 years ago with the Dragons, where the league was kind of in a basket case. And he's just done an amazing job over the last 11 years. And the last 5 years is with some of the programs he's put in, it's really take momentum. And aspect two was, you know, my last year at the Kings, we went through that issue with firepower taking over the team. And from that point, you know, I knew midway through that happening that the team was done. And I formed a real close relationship with Dory. And, you know, we were real tight through that. He really helped me manage the team. He helped, keep my spirits up. And we ended up having that 27-3 season and losing to Melbourne in, you know, game five at Sydney. And as we walked into the parking lot, you know, late afternoon, early evening, looking at the Harbour Bridge, he put his arm around me and said, "Brian, someday I'm going to get a team and you're going to be my coach." And through all this epidemic and, you know, being back in Australia since January, we've been talking and communicating. And, you know, then I met the other owners, Michael Proctor and Brian Colangelo, and was convinced that the ownership was going to be strong. And that was it.
Brian, you've seen so many different leagues, be it a player, a coach, on the international scene. In your opinion, where does the NBL sit right now?
Well, I think you've got the NBA, and then you've got the EuroLeague. You know, that competition in Europe with, you know, CSKA and Bologna. Those two leagues are obviously ahead of Australia. After that, the NBL can go with anybody. And watching the finals this year, you know, there's a lot of strong leagues around the world. Spain, Germany, we're recruiting out of all those in China. And I'm very familiar, and I watch the NBL, and it's right there, which is amazing, amazes everybody, the competition and the level of competition. And really what makes it that is not the imports, it's the Australian content and what's being developed here. We got over 400 kids playing in America, got names you don't even know that aren't even household names here that are dominating in Europe. And again, it's just amazing what a country of 25 million people, where you got really and sadly kind of a little bit of a second tier sport with Australian rules football and rugby and cricket, you know, to be producing what they're producing.
You've been highly successful as a coach. In your mind, Brian, and I'm sure you get asked this a lot, and a lot of people want to know, what in your mind makes a good coach, and why are you such a good coach?
Well, I'll never, that course I told you about, it was so interesting. You know, the guy was a really motivational guy, and I was young, and I was going to a team that had never played top division in Ballarat. And at the finish, you know, we kind of befriended each other. He tapped me and he said, you know, when you go back to Australia, Brian, he goes, make sure you cover these bases. Number one, he said, outwork your opponents. And he said, if they get up at 4, you get up at 2. If they train 4 hours a day, you train 8 hours a day. You know, Ballarat, go out and recruit. You know, just outwork your opponent. Number two is winning's in the picking and selection of people. And, you know, we went through, and it was really interesting in the last dance about Jerry Krause. And the aspect, I don't think people, you know, take enough notice of that. And it's something I've had some Zoom meetings on with some of the football clubs here, just on selection of people, the important characteristics of selecting people. So surround yourself with good people. And then the third aspect, and something that really, really helped me was, you know, get around, you're in a country, find a sport that they're great, where they're great, and be around people that are better than you. Surround your people with people that are better than you. And I really, really took notice of the football here and was around people like Mick Malthouse and, you know, Terry Wallace Wheaton, Dave Wheaton. just, you know, went to football practices, watched how they built team culture, watched the conditioning and the teamship. And there was a lot of areas in Australian rules football that are like basketball. And those keys are something that have stayed with me and have been harder, obviously, as you've gotten older. But, you know, I've always had, at the end of the day, guys that good players and guys that played hard and guys that, you know, you always want guys that want you to win, that are going to play for you. And that, X's and O's and all that, I may not have, you know, set the world on fire, but I've always had players that are committed, and I've had teams that, you know, want to win and want to win for me.
Thanks for joining us on the Big Sports Breakfast. Chris, how are you today?
All good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, how hard was it to keep a lid on it when you heard that Japan were pulling out of the hosting rights for the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup?
We weren't disappointed, but Japan are great international citizens in football, so obviously having one bit out of the Asian Confederation makes our job a bit easier.
Chris, can I ask, I guess Friday's results aside, what's the significance of just the bid itself?
I think it's galvanised the football community in the country. Our bid document has 8 Australian venues in it across all the states, basically. And I think it's given the football faithful, the 2 million-plus participants, something to look forward to and to work together with.
Chris, can you take us through Friday? Do you all gather together? Do you find out before the vote? Or would you, like everyone else, you just see
we'll unfold? Be watching a screen, socially distancing, of course. So some of us will be in head office in Sydney.
Yep.
It's 2 a.m. roughly, we think, our time. The meeting starts about 11 p.m. We're the last item on the agenda. Because we can't be there in person, we've pre-prepared a sort of 10-minute video. Both bidding nations can do that. And then it goes to a vote. It will be declared, and then we will know who voted for who.
And Chris, cynics will point to the failure of the 2022 men's bid when it was handed to Qatar and left what was a scarring experience for Australian football fans at the time. Why can we be confident in the FIFA process this time around?
I think they're two different eras. In this era, what they've done is it's been a very transparent and comprehensive bidding process. So any one of your listeners can get onto the FIFA website and have a look at our bid book, or that of Colombia's or anybody else's for that matter. Plus the fact that it's a transparent vote, you're not guessing who supported you. So I think it is a distinguishing feature of the two eras.
Chris, is this exactly what football needs in this country, the shot in the arm that we've been looking for?
I think so, yeah, Michael. Yeah, it's like all codes, you want to bring everyone along, and a World Cup is probably the pinnacle for athletes, and to have one on home soil would be wonderful for the Matildas and the Australian community. So having 32 countries, it's the first time it's gone to 32 countries, but at a different level again. And it'll be something the whole of Australia and New Zealand can join into.
You must be happy with the Matildas, Chris. I mean, the support that they receive here in Australia and the connection that they've got to the Australian public, they really are a great group, and you've got plenty of young women and young boys playing the game because of their success.
I think that's right. I think people look to them. I mean, I think in any sport, again, people need role models, and I think the Matildas do that really well, both on the park, and they're very generous with their time off the park to improve women's football generally.
What are the tangible benefits, Chris, the measurable things that will be there for us should we win these hosting rights?
Yeah, look, the infrastructure is there, basically, so that's good. A central part of what we're pushing here is actually legacy for the Asia-Pacific area. So we've got some initiatives around promoting gender equality long-term for both Australia, New Zealand and our Asian colleagues. And I think that's going to resonate with people as we move towards a more equal sort of society.
It's a joint bid with New Zealand and Australia, obviously, Chris, but hopefully we host the final, don't we?
Yeah, no, that's in the bid document. So opening game at Eden Park, if we're fortunate to win it, and final certainly be in Australia and Sydney.
Ah, beautiful. And just lastly, Chris, just why will the winter coming of the A-League, I guess, be more successful than its current predominantly summer season when we get this sort of drift towards the competition happening more in the winter months?
Yeah, I think one of the things we need to try to do is connect the huge grassroots in football, and having that play at a different time to the national men's competition and even the women's national competition doesn't really align it. So this is a chance to see whether we can connect to the pyramid problem.
Well, Chris, been great to talk to you. We're fingers crossed that it just all goes well Friday morning, and we have Colombia covered, and we're hosting or co-hosting the Women's World Cup in 2023.
Thanks for your time and your wishes.
Morning, Cameron. Thanks for joining us once again.
Good morning, gents.
Now, clearly, Steve Kearney's sacking has taken a huge emotional toll. How concerned are you, Cameron, that some players may want to come home, as Todd Payton indicated could happen yesterday?
Yeah, look, it's certainly a tough time for everyone, even without the unfortunate news around Steve. So the players have been, challenged by the COVID-19 scenario, but and then the Steve Kearney situation unfolded on the weekend added some pressure to that. So we're supporting the players through this. I haven't spoken to any player that's raised that particular issue with me, but of course we're keeping a close eye on everyone. But naturally, we have a job to do going forward now, and the players play a big role in that. But I'm also, I'm very conscious of the tight relationship they all had.
Cameron, can I ask, what are the Warriors looking for? Because it doesn't, since the NRL has come back, the performances haven't been, they haven't been amazing or as consistent, I'm sure, as you would like, but they haven't been that bad.
No, you're right, Michael, in terms of if you take a snapshot over that period. And I think, first and foremost, I want to say Steve Kearney, as a person off the field, has demonstrated an amazing package of attributes, and nothing greater than he's just an absolute champion of a bloke, and I've got a really strong bond with him. But we haven't just taken a snapshot over the COVID-19 period, and as a club, we understand the importance of the efforts everyone's going through, but doesn't negate our future responsibilities as well. So we need consistency, we need improvement. And, there's been some trends there for a period of time once we sat down and reviewed a number of things over the last 6 months.
What has the owner, Mark Robinson, and yourself flagged that needs to change at this club then, Cameron?
We need to make a huge amount of change. We need to turn this place on its head and really, really change things up from what's been happening over the last 25 years. And, you may have read recently, we've signed a deal now with Redcliffe in Australia to be our feeder club. So that'll take away our New South Wales Canterbury Cup team. We're going about this a different way over the next few years. So, we need to get someone to lead us through that, provide improvement, provide insight into a number of other systems and take us to a whole new level. And from the owner's perspective, once that decision was made, that was our plan for the future, we started looking at the pieces of the puzzle. And, you know, the timing's never right for these decisions to be made, but in my mind, the timing's right for us to plan for the future. So we just had to get on with it.
It must have been a tough conversation you had with Steve. And did it come as a surprise to Steve?
Yeah, it did, Laurie. It was tough from the outset. You've got to understand that Stephen and I, I've been here with Stephen since day one. I was part of the, you know, support crew for Stephen last year when things were going tough. And I was, you know, I really, really put out my hand up to support him to get an extension. So we have a very close bond, and you know, I can't speak highly enough of the blokes. It was an extremely tough thing to do on Saturday morning. And yes, you know, to be fair to say, under the circumstances, you know, he was devastated and naturally surprised as well. But as I said, it's never the right time. And it's never a good thing to do.
We're about to talk more cricket now. We're joined on the line by Australian vice-captain, also from the New South Wales Breakers, Rachel Haynes. Rachel, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys.
Now, since that memorable win there at the MCG in the 2020 World Cup final, what have you been up to?
Yeah, well, I guess a lot's happened over that time, hasn't it? It's been a pandemic and those sorts of things. But, yeah, unfortunately we didn't tour South Africa due to the pandemic. So we've just been on leave and come out of that over the last couple of weeks, which has been nice to link back in with the New South Wales squad.
Yeah, Rach, there's been a lot of talk about, well, obviously with the sacking of, the resigning of Kevin Roberts, the Cricket Australia CEO, and the money situation with all sports around the country. Where have you girls sat in regards to your Cricket Australia contract and also your New South Wales contracts?
Yeah, look, we've been really fortunate so far in that we haven't been impacted financially from the pandemic in terms of our playing contracts. But as Cricket Australia announced not too long ago, you know, the sport isn't immune, and unfortunately over this time people have lost their jobs. So yeah, look, I don't think, well, we're definitely not going to come out of it unscathed, and it's been a pretty challenging time for the sport, as it has for other sporting codes across the country and the world. So yeah, look, it's the positive, and what we've got to look forward to is obviously they've announced a full fixture heading into the summer, which gives us some hope, and hopefully we can get out on the field and play some really good cricket.
Looking back to the World Cup, it didn't start off great for you against India, but you ended up meeting India in the final. But tell us what it was like to run out there and, you know, play in front of 85,000 people at the MCG.
Yeah, it was a tremendous experience, to be honest. The whole tournament was, and up until that point, most of the players probably hadn't experienced a home World Cup, with the exception of maybe one or two. So to get that opportunity and to have the support across the whole tournament, and then that to culminate in that moment on International Women's Day and have the support of the country right behind us, it was really incredible to be part of, and I'm sure it's something we'll reflect back on and be really proud of.
Rachel, are the girls, have you started pre-season? I know Dominic Thornley is now the new New South Wales head coach, and if you have, what's it been like to get to know Dom and see his different style to previous coaches you've had?
Yeah, it's been really nice to get back in the New South Wales environment, to be honest. We've probably spent a fair bit of time away from it than in it over the last couple of years. So we got back to training a couple of weeks ago now. So as you know, Michael, pre-season's never that pleasant. So we've had a couple of tough weeks. But yeah, it's just been really nice to be back there. The New South Wales squad is a pretty young squad, so to have I guess myself and Elisa Healy, Erin Burns, Ash Gardner as well, even though she's probably still young herself, our Australian players back in that environment and contributing is really a positive thing. And obviously Dom's doing a fantastic job so far in leading our program and, making sure we all work together towards the start of the season.
Yeah, Theo, it's always difficult judging, you know, the best ever sides and the best ever eras. But in your mind, where does this Liverpool squad, this team, sit?
I think it's one of the very best ones. Obviously, I'm a bit too young to remember the great teams of Shankly and Paisley. But there's just something special about this Liverpool team. in the sense we can win games in just any way possible. And it's at a time when it seems even more competitive than it used to be back in the glory years. Like the Liverpool team, they're what, 22, 23 points clear at the top of the table. They've absolutely just demolished the season. Like, if you put this game, this season, as a video game and had your team losing one league game, winning all but two others, you think there'd be something dodgy going on there. Hmm. This is what Liverpool are doing. And they've got, what, the best centre-back in the world in Virgil van Dijk. They've got the best goalkeeper in the world in Alisson Becker. Trent Alexander-Arnold is just an incredible young talent, getting assists every week. And Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane, they've got two of the best forwards in the world. And it's just always exciting to watch them play. They always know how to get results, how to get victories. Or, I say most of the time, so there's a bit of rustiness today at the derby. Liverpool's teams of the past, we think of the glory years, but it was over a prolonged period of time. The teams had season after season together to build on this success and to really dominate English football and European football. Jurgen Klopp's team, granted, they're European champions, the world champions, and before the end of the month, they should be English champions, but have not had that opportunity yet. And they still look so good, so special. So you just give them a few more seasons together. Jurgen Klopp's contracted now, I think, until 2024. They should be able to be mentioned in that same breath and as a dominant force of English football.
Yeah, I was about to ask.
Head-to-head with Manchester City and...
Sorry there, Theo. No, I was about to ask about the group of players and the dynasty. Is that something that they are speaking about, is staying together, let's create our own little bit of history? And how confident are you of the manager staying and some of the more high-profile players staying in Liverpool when no doubt big money offers will be made?
I think that you should be quite confident that they will stay put. Jurgen Klopp, he signed his new contract in December. He's going to be at the club until 2024. Before he signed that contract, there was a feeling that he would leave at the end of it because I think at Mainz and Borussia Dortmund, he did his 7 years and then he moved on. And word from him was that he potentially wouldn't want to extend his deal because he'd want a break from football. But he knows how special this team is and there's more success in their legs. After winning the Champions League last year, there are a few grumbles from fans that Liverpool hadn't gone and spent big in the transfer market, but they ain't gone and got a marquee signing. But Jurgen Klopp came out and said that this team deserved another year together. And I think his words have been rewarded, the fact that the same team has gone out and smashed the Premier League this season. And the team's still fairly young, like Alisson Becker, Virgil van Dijk have plenty of years left ahead of them. Joe Gomez, Alexander-Arnold, Andy Robertson is still young for a defence. The front three, they're all pretty much at the peak of their powers, Salah, Firmino, Mane, so they should still be strong for another couple of years as well, at least. And the midfield, they've got so many options there, like Fabinho, Naby Keita. Even when you've got Gini Wijnaldum and Jordan Henderson, James Milner pushing 30, the wrong side of 30, they've still got legs in this team. And they are doing something that's incredible and it's special to watch. So I reckon there's a good few years left in them yet. And whilst you get rumours of, say, a Real Madrid or a Barcelona wanting a Sadio Mane or Mohamed Salah, especially with the coronavirus pandemic and the football market being a bit different this year, I don't see anyone going just yet. It might be different in, say, a year's time, 2 seasons' time, maybe when Klopp goes, because he's like, we've had our chapter here, now is the time to move on. But it's very much unfinished business in this Liverpool team now. They'll have the motivation from winning the Champions League, hopefully winning the Premier League this year. Next year, they'll want to go and win it out in front of their own fans when they can properly celebrate with them to win it. And they'll want to win a few more trophies over the next couple of years and then reassess.
Yeah, well, it's a matter of just the inevitable delayed for the moment. Theo, great to talk to you.
Thanks for having us on.
G'day, Vonnie. Yes. How are you this morning?
Oh, very good. I am thrilled at the prospect of being your cornhole correspondent. How exciting.
I can see you on a Thursday and a Friday night there, Vonnie. Welcome to the cornholing Australia competition.
This is the ACL, the Australian Cornhole League.
This is right.
Vonnie, as you can tell, we haven't slept much last night.
You know what? I've actually been Googling, I've been listening this morning. You can pick yourself up a cornhole board and those little bean bags that they toss for about $140.
It's cheap. It's cheap and easy, and it's a good game to be playing. And do you know the prize money over in America, Vonnie, is $100,000 to the winner?
oh my God, US, that's a...
Yes.
What am I doing with my life? I'm going to begin training immediately.
Had you heard of this sport before?
Never.
No, neither did I.
No, amazing.
And a lot of our listeners have texted in how silly we are because we haven't known about it. They've been watching it for years on television.
You know, I reckon I've seen it. I went over to Hawaii to cover Pipeline years ago when I was working at Channel 9. And at the resort, I feel like I saw families and things like that playing it. So it must be, you know, very social, very leisure time activity. And obviously it's got a hotly contested championship component too. But, yeah, I reckon I've seen them play it. I wasn't sure what it was. But it's something that I'd really like to get into, especially if you can have a lemonade while you're doing it.
Yeah, well, a couple. So anyway, we've started the unofficial, well, it isn't official, the Australian Cornhole League. Only Loz is well involved and he's got you involved and we're all involved now. But Loz, sorry, Vonnie, this week, never a quiet week in the NRL, isn't it? And we started with a coach sacking and one of great surprise last weekend.
Yeah, we were actually on air for Super Saturday and we hit halftime of that first game of the Dragons. And, you know, you guys are in broadcast, you understand, you get a bit of a count from the director and they said, 30 seconds, we're on air. And then all of a sudden the producer got an area and they said, Stephen Kearney's been sacked. I was in shock. We had no idea. I said, what do you mean? They said, oh, Bill Rossfield's just tweeted it. So we were scrambling for details as well. And I think the timing of it was what caught us on the hop. You know, Warriors are not dreadful. This is certainly, they're by far not the worst team in the competition at the moment. And look, they weren't great against the Bunnies last week. But look, as the story unfolded, we saw, you know, the players were very distressed. There was that really emotional haka. We know that Stephen Kearney was in tears. And now we understand a little bit more about the background as to why now. You know, it's about player retention, player recruitment for 2021. They said it would be unfair to just, knowing that they were going to part ways with Stephen Kearney, they may as well do it now rather than at the end of the season. I think given everything the Warriors have been through, that's another element to this that sort of didn't make sense, you know, to destabilise that playing group even further. But, I mean, when the caretaker coach describes it like a death in the family, you know that, you know, it's something that was very, very serious and very, very upsetting for the Warriors. So, yeah, look, we had no idea either, and we were sort of just on air and doing our best to try and get as much detail. But, yeah, I think it was shock is probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, my worry about the decision, Vonnie, it could go pear-shaped from here on in. I know that there has been some talk with some of their players are unsure of how much longer they will stay out here in Australia. And I reckon if they don't get results in the next week or even this weekend, if they happen to get a scoreline put on them by Melbourne, I think things can unravel pretty quickly for this team.
Well, that's right. I mean, Todd Payton was saying that there is no guarantee that the players will stay here. You know, given that everything that is going on, we know that some of the families have arrived here in Australia. They've been assisted in you know, being able to travel internationally. They're now outside the bubble. They're waiting their time and then they'll enter that terrible camp situation. But, yeah, look, it is destabilising. And, you know, now we've got a plethora of coaches with their names being attached to the club. Loz, what type of person needs to come in so that the Warriors are an attractive prospect? They're an appealing prospect so that you're going to... you know, bolster your roster to not just have one or two superstars like a Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. You need more than just one bloke.
G'day, Tom. How are you this morning?
Hey, boys. How you going?
Going really well, mate. Now, coming off that loss to Essendon, what improved against North Melbourne to ensure you got the result there against the Kangaroos?
Yeah, we just spoke about a few things from Essendon and put it towards North Melbourne. The pressure was much better and the competitiveness was there, so that was a massive part to winning.
Are you finding, due to the shorter quarters, mate, that if a team gets a roll on, it's probably harder to swing the momentum?
I think you just got to, when a team gets a roll on, you've got to be able to stop it quicker. You can't just keep letting them roll on for 10 minutes. You've got to be able to get a goal back within that 10 minutes. Otherwise, they can kick four or five on you pretty quickly. And then the quarter's pretty much done in another 5 minutes. So you got to be able to peg one or two back quickly, and so it doesn't get out of hand.
Tom, a lot of talk before the start of the season about the Swans in a somewhat of a rebuild phase. How do you take that as a player? And do you guys believe you can certainly have a crack at winning the flag this year?
Oh, absolutely. I think inside the four walls, we believe we can win the premiership, and I think we've got some really, really talented. We say young, but we don't like to say that inside the four walls. We really think we can go well. I think Ollie Florent, the last two games have been unbelievable. And then also you got the older guys still going, playing really well, like Luke Parker in the midfield, Joey Kennedy, Dane Rampey. So we've also still got a couple of really important players to come back in as well.
When you mention the Swans, you always talk about contested football and the Swans being able to be winning the contested football and being hard at the footy. That seemed to be there the other day against North Melbourne.
Yeah, absolutely. We're back to our best. Back to our best in that area and in the pressure as well. So we can still improve again on that, which is exciting. So we're looking forward to Thursday night against the Dogs.
We're talking to Tom Papley from the Swans, and Tom McCartan hit his head pretty badly on the ground there and was concussed. How's he faring? It looks like he'll miss that game.
Yeah. Tommy won't play this week, which is unfortunate with the concussion protocols these days. They're pretty strict, so he won't play this week, but it just gives another guy another opportunity. I'm not sure who that will be, but yeah, it's unfortunate for Tommy, but fingers crossed he'll be back the week after and he's all well.
Yeah, due to the Essendon player testing positive to COVID-19, there's been some restrictions in what you're allowed to do at training in regards to contact. Does that affect you guys a lot?
I suppose it's a little bit different. We're not allowed to have contact. I suppose we usually tackle, so it's a different one, but it is what it is. We just, as a guy, we move on. We've been pretty strict with all the protocols, and it is what it is, and we move on, and as long as we can play some footy, we're happy to do whatever it takes.
Happy birthday for yesterday, Cookie. No doubt it was a raging Tuesday birthday.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, and that was the last couple of months been quiet, so it was good to get out to a cafe, so that was good.
I was about to say, mate, how do you celebrate in isolation? But you're allowed her out. The rules have changed somewhat.
Yeah, the rules have changed somewhat. Still going through what we can and can't do, but there's definitely some things we can. That was, you know, go play golf, which some of the boys love, and the cafes. So, that's what I did. Yesterday I went with my wife and daughter out for breakfast, and had a good day off from training as well.
Are you allowed to, like, go out to a pub or anything like that?
No, so no. That's probably good for everyone. Everyone's saving their money a bit more there, yeah. So it'll be good. So, no, there's pubs, clubs, bowling clubs.
The tab?
Yeah, the tab. It doesn't say tab on the list.
Ah, sure, there's a loophole.
If you celebrate a good victory, Cookie, are you allowed to go to someone's house? How do you celebrate? Are you not allowed to get together in groups still? What's the go?
Yeah, so we're just clearing up a few things. You can have some visitors to your house, up to 5 and 10 in total, I think, for the day. You also have to go through who's visiting your house. And if you're going to visit someone like family, you have to get it approved by the NRL as well. They're just going through a couple of extra steps to who you're actually visiting and what, if they have any, if they're in that age bracket, high health risk and stuff like that. So they're just double-checking all those things as well. So there's a few things you've got to get done before you can do some things, but it's definitely been good to have some restrictions lifted, cafes, going to the beach, or playing golf.
Yeah, I know things have changed since I played, but one of the best things about, having a victory or playing a game was the get-together after the match. Does that mean you probably stay more at venue, like in the dressing shed for a little bit longer than what you have in the past?
Well, I think we should be fine to go in groups to games now, which might allow us to hang around the sheds a bit longer, which will be good. But at the moment, like the early games where you had to drive yourself out to games, then couldn't have too many drinks in the sheds after because obviously you had to drive. So hopefully moving forward now that we can probably hang around a little bit more and celebrate those wins because, you know, that is one of the best parts of having a win, especially, you know, away trips or stuff like that. You get to celebrate the team. But, you know, we can't do that at the moment. But hopefully, you know, moving forward, like you said, we can spend a bit more time after games now that we can probably carpool to the games.
Now, Cookie, dead set, how many jobs does your coach get linked to?
Fair few. So I read something the other day or something. He was doing the Warriors Monday, Wednesday, Dragons Tuesday, Thursday, and then I think the Bulldogs on a weekend. So he's linked to all those clubs. But no, I can understand why. He's a great coach, and you know, but we love him here.
What have you got out of your relationship with Wayne Bennett? Take us into the things we don't see in regard to his player interaction.
He's great with this, you know, mentoring players. He understands how different players react to situations and how they take feedback as well. I'd like to think he's definitely hard on me at times, and which I do enjoy because he definitely wants to get make me a better player, and that's what I want to do as well. So sometimes things can be harsh to hear, but it's what I need to hear sometimes to grow as a player. So I've enjoyed that part of having him here. And, you know, he came after I had it lucky to have a pretty good year in 18. And then after that, I wanted to take my game to another level. So I think it's he's come to the club at the right time. And just certain things of not overplaying my hand and understanding the job, doing the right job for the team and using the players around you as well, which has been a big one for me.
Yes, we're about to speak to a man who's played 39 games for the Giants since his debut in 2017. Midfielder is from Collingally near Wagga. Leads the Coleman medal race at the moment with 8 goals as well. Harry Perryman, good morning to you, mate.
Good morning, boys. Thanks for having me.
Mate, are you giving some stick to Jeremy Cameron after going ahead of him in the Coleman run?
Yeah, I've definitely been letting him know about it. We're in these little small groups and I'm in his group, so I've been definitely giving it to him.
Beautiful. Now, can you put your finger on why the club has struggled, though, with results since the restart?
Yeah, we had a good first game, which felt like ages ago against the Cats. But, yeah, we've definitely come back a bit flat, which is a bit disappointing. But usually after a couple of bad performances, we've usually bounced back pretty well. So, yeah, the boys will be looking to bounce back tomorrow night.
Yeah, what's Leon sort of worked on and what's he been most frustrated or disappointed with over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, there's been a couple of things, mainly a contested ball has been pretty ordinary the last few weeks. That's what we prided ourselves on in the finals last year, and it hasn't been great this year, the start of this year. So we just got to get back to basics really, and just keep it simple.
Harry, what about expectation? Does that provide extra nerves? I guess the success of last season now into this year, has that made any difference?
No, I don't think so. I know we came back in good shape in pre-season and we had a good start to the year, and then we obviously went on this COVID break, and I think once we get back into it, and we've obviously started pretty slow since coming back, I think once we get back into the swing of it again, we start gelling together, we'll be right to go.
Gee, I'll tell you what, Terry Wallace hasn't missed you after you had that nice little melee with the Bulldogs last week. He described the Giants' approach as rubbish and many were fined, including yourself. Was there a concerted effort, Harry, to rough the Dogs up, or was the scuffle just a product of that rivalry that's established between your two clubs?
Yeah, I think it just kind of all just started. You get pretty fired up out there on the game, especially when it's not going your way, so I think I probably started it in there, but it's probably not the best way to go about it. But I'm sure this week we'll just focus on the footy and just go about playing good footy.
Yeah, when you talked before about like contested possession, how do you get people to buy into that? Because is that a sort of way of sort of saying to the players we're not committed enough at the football? And when you get challenged like that as a group, does it make you sort of more determined now to go out there and be braver in situations when you've got to put your body into the contest?
Yeah, definitely. I reckon that's when we're playing our best footies, when we've definitely been challenged, and I know the coaches have definitely challenged us, and we've been challenging each other this week. So, I'm sure we'll bounce back big this week against the Pies.
There's been a lot of talk, too, about, you know, the shortened games. Has that got anything to do, do you think, with your with the way your team's playing? Have you adjusted to? Is it a more high paced game? Is it a game that you have to start well, and when you get in front, you can control the game a lot better than what you probably could have done in the past?
Yeah, I don't. We haven't talked about that too much. I don't think it affects it too much. Everyone's in the same boat, so. Yeah, a good start is definitely handy, but we haven't had one of them for a while, so we'll definitely try and get one this week. And yeah, with the shorter quarters, you can definitely it's a lot higher paced and a lot quicker, so you definitely do run the game out a lot better.
Richie, great to talk to you on the Big Sports Breakfast. How are you?
Very good. I'm actually struggling to hear. I might have to move, but keep speaking. But I'm struggling to get a proper clear.
No worries. It's Laurie Daly here. Rich, how are you, mate?
Loza, how are you? I'm very good, thanks.
That's good. Hey, mate, we saw what happened with the Warriors over the weekend and all the sacrifices that they've made to come out here to Australia and be in quarantine for a couple of weeks and then to be together in this camp for 8 weeks. And, yeah, the results weren't going that great for them, but since the resumption of play, they've won 2 out of 4. And then all of a sudden, the bombshell news over the weekend that Stephen Carney was sacked. What was your reaction to the decision?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very abrupt call. And it's based on a clearly results-based driven decision from Mark Robinson. Under, I guess, duress with what they've gone through and the amount of work that Stephen Kearney has put in through the injury crisis that they've had through that period, it's quite a hardline call, but a call that he's obviously very happy to make and a hardline approach which they think would work in this current situation and moving forward for the Warriors.
Richard, do you think making a tough decision like this at this time is what the players need? Again, I have no doubt they're looking for better results, but is a decision like this going to help the short-term results, in your opinion?
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? So, I mean, as a player, depending how you perceive information, but you'll find a way. If you're desperate enough and you're courageous enough, you'll find a way to get results. And, you know, whilst they were going through such a difficult period and the history of what the Warriors have been through, you know, hasn't worked before. And I guess this approach, they may think it will work. The players have gone through something they respect, Stephen Kearney, and it wasn't his fault, and the players have verbiage that and what we've seen. But ultimately, it's the players that really need to step up. Mm. The coach has done everything possible. They've had the training that is necessary to get them up to speed. Clearly, they haven't probably got the roster that suits the style of game in today's world. But I think it may be the approach. I'm not sure, but I think it's not the right approach in terms of so early on in the season. There's a long way to go and things can change.
We had Kevy Walters, Queensland coach, on yesterday, and he would like to see a New Zealand coach continue on with the Warriors. What's your take on the next person for that role?
Well, I think in my personal opinion, Robinson Mark knows Basin Jones pretty well. And he funded a local club called Point Shed through that period. I think it was about 5 years ago. And I'm thinking in my head that he may be pipeline for that job. Tony Iroh has been still there and had a lot of experience at the Warriors and the New Zealand Rugby League. So I'm assuming that probably one of those two players will take that role.
Richie, a lot of people always, you know, speak about the Warriors and say they've got so much talent to choose from and they always continue to underperform. What do they need to do well to have consistency in the NRL and to challenge for that competition?
That's a good question, Lars. I think, from my eyes, I think the standard of football at club level on the juniors is not up to scratch. I mean, if you look at Australia and the resources they draw upon with all the clubs that are in Sydney and Queensland, we're basically drawing resources an IQ from local clubs here. It's not an excuse, but the harsh reality now. We're competing against Australia, who have got high performance units that range up to 20 million plus. We've got clubs here that are struggling big time. And the coaching, I guess, knowledge base is probably not where it should be. Guidance from families, the environment in which our kids are coming through at the moment. Seeing rugby league as a way out is a good driver, but ultimately that driver becomes singularly financial, and it's not the correct why, I think. So we are in a bit of a, I think, in a situation where we've got to just govern it better. I think the Auckland Rugby League, New Zealand Rugby League, I think need to come together and really come to a consensus that we need to change our approach.
G'day, Jimmy. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, going really well. So there's a story we were just talking about around here in Sydney today that, well, ANZ Stadium, all things, you know, continuing as far as a relapse in coronavirus in Victoria is concerned, could end up with the AFL Grand Final. I know how that would be received in Victoria, South Australia and Western Australia. Wouldn't be popular.
Yeah, it wouldn't be popular at all. Apart from the Victorians jumping up and down, you're right. Then South Australia and Western Australia to jump in as well. But the difficulty with it all is that the AFL and the MCC just renegotiate a deal to take it out to 2057 full year. So there's a contract in place. It'd have to be significant, probably financially, both for the MCC and the AFL to shift it. It all comes down to dollars and cents, doesn't it?
Yeah, it would. But wouldn't there be a clause in the contract somewhere, Jimmy? I mean, if they can only, you know, a capacity at the MCG, if they're only allowed to have 30 or 40,000 people in there, would they still demand it be played there, or would there be an angle for the AFL to say, well, hang on, the contract is not what was promised, and commercially it's more viable for us to take it to another venue?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure many contracts around the world would have had pandemic conditions in it. So I think they could probably argue that point a fair bit. It's what goes on around Grand Final as well as Melbourne. So you'd have, I think, a lot of people from the business sector as well jumping up and down. So if you could have 30 to 40,000, that means you can have the activations around the ground, you can have the different things going on in the city. Look, I'm open to it. I'm not ruling it out. I'm just trying to work the way through it as far as, you know, people are set on the Grand Final being at the MCG. I have no issue with it being played in this year of all years in New South Wales, Queensland, anywhere. Play it anywhere, I'm just happy to do it. But they say the Grand Finals are a corporate affair anyway. So I guess that's an argument in your favour, Loz. But, yeah, it'll be filled up by high-paying ticket holders and not necessarily for the fans. That's why they say prelim final week is more for the fans.
Tough couple of months, though, Jimmy, if they lost the AFL Grand Final and then lost Boxing Day Test match. Can you imagine Warnie? Warnie and Bill Laurie, they would want to destroy the world.
Oh, well, it'd be, they might as well turn the place into a great housing development, shouldn't they? It's right in the centre of town. It's fetch a good dollar. Oh, geez. They'd go crazy if they lost both. But the Western Australian Premier, Mark McGowan, he loves jumping up on his soapbox and declaring stuff, and he encourages his state to be proactive and ambitious, and no doubt he'd have them all fired up. If we can't get the Grand Final, what's next in our sight? The Boxing Day Test.
It's still water to go under the bridge, but you know, you never know, I suppose. You just got to keep open-minded about it and fingers crossed that everything starts to settle down sooner rather than later. But Jimmy, GWS, what happened to them last week against the Bulldogs?
Yeah, that was not very good result for my Giants there, but the Bulldogs were fantastic. They were under the pump. Going back to last year about not being tough enough, and I think we spoke about this, probably the worst thing you'd be called in sport is being soft, and they were starting to get that tag, and didn't they come out? They stood up to, I guess, the physical barrage of the Giants, and then probably turned the tables, were just much harder at the footy and the man in the end.
How do they turn it around against Collingwood this week?
Gee, they've got to play some good footy. Collingwood, probably with Port Adelaide, are equal premiership favourites early. They are impossible to score against. They've played three games of footy and they've only given up on average about 36 points. So they are unbelievably solid. They've got to be aggressive still, aggressive at the ball, and then they've got to be brave. It sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but you've got to take more risks. When you're down on sort of form and you're out a bit of a rhythm, you've actually got to take a few risks and get that energy back going in your game.
Well, they're back, the Supercars, back this weekend in Sydney Town, and we're about to be joined by seven-time championship winner from Red Bull HRT, Jamie Wincup. Morning to you, mate.
Morning, guys. How are you?
You're going very well. Sure beats being in a simulator, actually being behind a real car.
100%. 100%. Good to be chatting with you guys. It's been a while. I've missed you. But as you say, we're back on track, which is nice. We've had, if anyone didn't know, we've had 10 weeks of E-Series simulator driving. So it's nice to park that up and get the real cars back out on the track.
Now, you've been a big instigator as well, Jamie, in trying to freshen up supercars. What are you trying to change?
Well, I've been in a lucky position where I've been elected onto the Supercars Commission. And most organisations around the country have a board of directors, but because supercars are so technical, we also have a board, but then we have a commission as well to make decisions on the technical aspects of the sport. So very honoured. I must be getting old if I'm getting signed up for a role like this. But great to have the opportunity to be able to be a part of a group to make some decisions to ensure the future strong.
Yeah, difficult year for a lot of sports, Jamie. But it's great to see sports now starting to get back up and running in this country. The calendar. What does it look like for you guys for the rest of the year?
So a normal supercar calendar would be 14 rounds, start in late February, early March, go right through to December. We've experimented with a few things, but the current plan is to have a 10-round championship, still go through till the start of the midway through December, and then have our usual summer break. So reduced down to 10, that's the current plan. We're massively respectful of what's going on in the world at the moment. So we'll make a start this weekend, but if the situation was to change, then we'll address that and cut rounds back where we need to.
Jamie, how's the break been for you personally? We've spoken to a lot of, I won't say older athletes, more experienced athletes in their sports, and they've really embraced some time away. I know you've been involved in the E-Series, but have you enjoyed some time away, and has it made that hunger come back, I guess?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I'm exactly the same boat as those other guys you've probably spoken to, where when you've been doing the same thing for 15 to 20 years, there's two things. You learn you love the sport and you can't do without it. And, you know, there's an aspect where you want to get back and doing it. But to be honest, having a little break and not having to travel and not having to do a similar thing day in, day out, it's actually been quite a good thing. And I feel like I'm more mentally refreshed now than I have been for a long time. And, you know, I think it'll be like the first concert we all go to. You know, we're not going to be worried about the queue, or not going to be worrying about all the small things now. We're just going to be appreciative of being able to go and play sport and just look forward to the main aspects of it.
What do you make of going to Bathurst twice this season?
Oh, well, that's actually that's changed. That's changed. We were originally planned to do another Bathurst event, like a sprint race, not a big long endurance race, but a sprint race in February. But we've wound that back, and now we're going to finish the championship in December. But don't be surprised if you see that Bathurst sprint race be maybe the first race of next year, so to speak. So still plenty of changes, still plenty of things we're moving around at the moment. But Bathurst is by far the best track we have here in this country. So I think to go there twice would be a great thing.
Thanks again for all the texts and emails. Loving the interaction at the moment, particularly as more sport comes back on the scene in the wake of the pandemic. And you can catch us Monday to Friday, 5:30 a.m. until 9.